Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, October 11th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. We encourage you to do that soon and often. You can also go to the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file that you click, download, print off, use it as often as you'd like. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. There's a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that people have worked through that or given powerful testimonials about how working through that worksheet process has improved their quality of life. And if you go there and do those things, read that chapter, download that app, do the worksheet process itself, we encourage you to do that soon and often because that frequently stimulates people to have comments or questions, testimonials, and that's what we're here to entertain. Our call-in number, if you choose to do that, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will let me know you have a comment or a question, and we can have a discussion. We're also working through the Course in Miracles lessons in the workbook for Course in Miracles this year, and today is the 284th day of the year. Today's lesson simply reads, I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt. The commentary reads, loss is not loss when it is properly perceived. Pain is impossible. There is no grief with any cause at all. And suffering of any kind is nothing but a dream. This is the truth. At first to be but said, and then repeated many times, and next to be accepted as but partly true with many reservations. Then it is to be considered seriously more and more, and finally is it accepted as truth. I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt. And I would go beyond these words today and put all reservations and past all reservations and arrive at full acceptance of the truth in these words. I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt. Father, what you have given cannot hurt. So grief and pain must be impossible. Let me not fail to trust in you today by accepting the joyous as your gifts and accepting only the joyous as truth. The Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout has the lesson 284 labeled, "No worry before it's time." She quotes Epictetus as saying, "Events don't cause stress. Your views of those events cause stress." So this thought's been around a long time. If you want to, you know, check out Epictetus, and you'll find that 135 AD, so 135 years before the time of Christ, Epictetus was saying things like, events don't cause stress. Your views of those events cause stress. Pam writes, after fire destroyed the home of Harvard professor Ellen Langer, her insurance agent came to view the damage and file his report. "This is remarkable," he said. 80% of your possessions have gone up in smoke. Your call is the first where the damage is worse than you reported. Most people, after a devastating loss, double down on negativity. They throw every ounce of their emotional energy into their loss. Langer, who spent 40 years researching how perceptions and beliefs affect our lives, refused to go there. "I'd already had the loss," Langer explained. "Why should I also give it my soul? Why would I want to pay for it twice?" Langer understands Lesson 284. I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt. Once I set a belief in stone, my psyche goes out to seek confirmation. Langer turned what most would call a devastating fire into a game. She got to stay in a hotel. She made new friends with the staff. She got to march her dogs through the lobby every morning. Consequently, she can't remember a single thing she lost in the fire. It's remarkable what you find when you strip away the mindless insecurity and negativity, she said. So today's lesson is, I can change all thoughts that hurt. Actually, the lesson reads, I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt. Now, one of the things that we missed because of my being in a seminar on Friday was the reading in the Course in Miracles workbook on what is the Holy Spirit. And if you haven't done that, I recommend you go back and take a look at their thoughts in the Course in Miracles about what is this thing they call Holy Spirit or the Holy Breath or the Great Comforter or, you know, this part of the Trinity. And the essence of this writing in Course in Miracles workbook, right before lesson 281, is that the Holy Spirit is that part of our giftedness from the Creator that mediates between illusions and truth. And you have been given, we've all been given, this part of our consciousness that can be tapped into to see the truth, to see that all the dreams, all of the experiences, perceptions we create that lead to pain and suffering are false. And we can lay aside the sights and sounds that lead to pain and suffering and sadness and anger, and where they were perceived before, this process of dismantling the false, they call forgiveness in the Course in Miracles. Dismantling what's false is this process of forgiveness. And that's the role of this part of your mind that they call the Holy Spirit. That's this role of this connection you have to a higher wisdom. So you might want to go back and read that. It's right before lesson 281. And it leads into the realization that I can elect to change all thoughts that hurt because they are from false perception. They are from a distortion. And it might come from my own time on the planet. It might come from the bloodline. It might come from what I watched my parents do. But the tendency to go to the negative is programmed into us one way or another, and because it's something that's just been programmed, it can be deprogrammed. We can train ourselves, as Ellen Langer did in the story that Pam Grout shares with us. We can program ourselves to acknowledge that we do not need to look at the negative. We can look at whatever happens with acceptance, with allowance, with surrender. And when we do, our life changes for the better. So today's Monday. I was part of a 3-day integrative mental health summit over the weekend, and I did everything I know how to do to share Richard Moss's interview on Friday, and it would not share. It just wouldn't work. And I still don't know what that problem is, but something about the technology, probably one of the updates to one of my software programs, is preventing me from uploading best of shows right now. So my apologies for that. I'm hopeful that that's going to get corrected, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is I would like to be able to share some of these interviews with this audience. And I learned a couple of new things at the Mental Health Integrative Mental Health Summit, which is not the usual for me with these summits, so that was nice. If you want access to that, if you want to find out about lining up for next year's summit, it's integrativementalhealthsummit.org, all one word. And we have plenty of time. We have about 45 minutes for comments, questions, answers, topic suggestions. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind today? one of the more striking things about the Integrative Mental Health Summit was how there's a gentleman in England, Winfred Dore, D-O-R-E, who has been working with a set of exercises that help people increase the functioning of their cerebellum. And when the functioning of the cerebellum is increased, the cerebellum is that part of your brain that helps you do things on autopilot. And what he said in terms of the explanation of why the exercises they do are so beneficial to people who have attention deficit disorder and or difficulty reading and sometimes the depression and anxiety that comes from that, great difficulty organizing things, etc., is that the cerebellum is the part of the brain that codes things that we do over and over again, not just the mental emotional, but also the physical. So if your cerebellum isn't working well, you won't learn how to ride a bike. It's the part of your mind that all the calculations you have to make of balance and movement and shifting weight and recognition of the steering and all of that that has to happen when you ride a bike, that gets processed in the cerebellum and becomes codified as this automatic process. And if your cerebellum isn't working very well, that doesn't work. But a lot of that same kind of coding of things happens when we read. So if we don't have the cerebellum working well to learn this automatic process for understanding letters as they show up and keeping our eyes moving in a steady pattern and pulling in the patterns that are that allow us to do that recognition, if that's not working well, we have a very difficult time reading and or remembering what we read. So what they've learned is that if you do some special exercises that have to do with balance and equilibrium and have to do with some other things, you can actually stimulate growth of cells in the cerebellum. And these these cells, the name of them is escaping now, whether it's T cells or whatever, that are so flexible they can become whatever they need to be, the growth of those cells is stimulated in the cerebellum when we do these two kinds of two or three aspects of exercise at the same time. And so that's a program that Winfred Dore has developed and they make available. They can't yet make it available for free, but it is not extraordinarily expensive and is useful for people at most all ages. So it's just one of the things that was a new thing for me to learn over the 3 days of the Integrative Mental Health Summit. It was also just a delight to be around people who are working on the idea of creating resources for people that are self-directed, that are other than just the absorbing medications, etc. Another tremendous lecture was given by Dr. Walsh, and Dr. Walsh is working with the work, he's continuing the work he did with Mr. Pfeiffer years ago in nutrition and the role of various types of deficiencies and imbalances that can be corrected with changes in nutrition and how they are directly related to many of the things that these days most doctors just give a medication for. They give a psychotropic medication, and these things can be changed very directly by changing either the balance of the nutrients that are in the body or adding nutrients in the body or getting rid of heavy metal toxicity in the body. And they've zoned in on 7 different states related to nutrition and whether a person is methylated or over-methylated or under-methylated, whether or not they have too much copper in their system or not enough copper in their system. And it was fascinating. And it got some of the most excited comments of any of the talks. I just thought I should let you know that Dr. Walsh wrote a book, and my note program is taking a moment to load up, but I will give you the name of the book he wrote, which contains a lot of the information that he was sharing in this discussion. While we wait for that, there were people that were talking about various things by parents and doctors who have people in their family or children in their family who have autism as a diagnosis. And Dr. Walsh wrote the book Nutrient Power. So if you go and look for Dr. Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, and his book Nutrient Power, lots of good information in there about these 7 areas, imbalances related to methylation, zinc deficiency, copper overload, folate deficiency and overload, pyrrole disorder, toxic metal overload, and fatty acid imbalances. So these are the 7 areas that they have found many, many of the symptoms that people end up going to psychiatrists and psychologists for help with can be dramatically improved by looking at those 7 areas. So, you know, we talk about the reality management worksheet and managing our negative emotions, and we talk about how everything that is true spirituality is highly practical. And that list of things I just mentioned is highly practical for helping with anger, anxiety, grief, difficulty concentrating, organization, reading disabilities, agitation. So it's highly practical to take a look at what's happening in my body and what kind of balances or imbalances am I experiencing that might be driving my mental and emotional experience of life, other than just conflicting goals or the activation of traumatic energy from the past, etc. So just a couple things to share from the summit this weekend. And and we're interested in hearing what's on your mind. What would be a useful topic for you for spending the next 30-some minutes. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we'll have a conversation. Otherwise, I'll start talking about Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness, which I'm listening to again, and he talks about how there's a little boy, and he was bragging to his friend that he was, their family goes to an Episcopal church. And he said, are you Episcopalian? And the second little boy said, no, we belong to another abomination. And the point is, Anthony's trying to help us understand that the thoughts we have about ourselves, the labels we give ourselves, the identifications that we use are not who we are. 828, is this Magda?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I was just what I wanted to find out is if the most or some of the information in the conference you were just speaking of was an atomic would be useful for lay folk, those who are not in the profession, because when I read the titles of the presentation last week when I was trying to decide if I wanted to go, it looked like things were directed mostly to medical people and folks in psychology and counseling and so forth. But what you've just shared with us, these last two sharings, seem to be very pertinent to everybody. So I'm wondering, was there a lot more that was presented that would be useful for non-professional folk?
Well, while the point of the presentation was to put alternative solutions in the hands of everyday citizens, there were a couple of the lectures that, like the Dr. Walsh lecture, that leaned heavily into terminology that went beyond me, because it was medical, chemical reactions, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't get caught up in that and you just say, oh, what he's saying is, if you have one of these seven imbalances, it can directly impact your mental and emotional functioning, then it's very useful for the common person to say, okay, I'm going to go have these imbalances checked out. I'm going to take a look at maybe his book, or maybe I'm going to go to a holistic provider and say, look, I've heard that anxiety or depression or whatever the symptom is I'm looking for help with can be affected by one of these imbalances, so I'd like to get checked. And if I've got the imbalance, then I can start correcting the imbalance rather than taking a psychiatric medication.
Mm-hmm.
And unless I'm in a crisis, I really would rather use a balancing agent or a change in my diet or something to detoxify from a heavy metal rather than taking a psychotropic medication.
I'm in total agreement with that. Well, that sounds very useful. And would you say that most of the presentations, because there were a lot of presentations, that most of them would have some value for us non-professionals?
You're trying to put me on the spot, right? You're trying to say, should I invest
yeah.
this money in this? And
yeah.
Here,
so that
here,
was my second question was, is it still obtainable to get the recordings? You know,
they're going to be selling them for, you know, at least the rest of this month. They're going to want people to, you know, purchase them.
Sure.
But, you know, the one talk was how food impacts your brain and body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then another talk was how hormones and metals affect women's mental health. And while much of that second talk was, you know, stuff that you'd understand it more easily if you were a medical doctor, it's still a really good thing to hear so that you can decide, okay, if I have these kinds of issues they're talking about,
right,
would I be better informed as I approach my doctor and ask for this or that to be evaluated? And then there was a talk by Dr. Mumford about children and mental health, and it was just a lot about how she believes that the masks and the isolation of kids was devastating for their mental health. And so that was a little misleading in the topic. But then there's a whole talk on faith and mental health, a talk about integrative psychiatry, a talk on new innovations in stress management, a talk on how to discuss touchy topics with people, a talk on domestic violence and mental health, a talk on the neurological reasons why learning struggles and mental health are linked. I was only able to listen to one of those six different topics.
Yes.
And so I'm looking forward to the recording so I can listen to some of the others.
Yeah.
There was a panel discussion on mental health and trauma, and that had David Grand, who created the technique called brain spotting. And it had Dr. George Lindenfeld, who uses the BAUD device, which is a bioacoustical utilization device. And it had Brad Yates, who does EFT tapping on he's got over 1,000 videos on YouTube about tapping, and that's quite a resource. I frequently refer my patients to those YouTube videos with Brad Yates, and I was also on that panel. There was a talk on bridging the integrative and the Western medicine as a path to deeper healing. Again, some of that talk will go into things that are too technical for me to understand, but I got a lot out of it in terms of understanding where I might want to, you know, branch away from just going to my doctor. You know, like if I have a fever that won't break, or I have a strong, you know, rash, or if I've got, you know, very acute abdominal pain, I'll probably go to my primary care physician and or the emergency room, because that's what this medicine is best for. But if I've got a chronic problem, if I've got something that I've been struggling with for weeks or months or years off and on, and I will probably go to an integrative, if I go to a physician at all, it will be to an integrative physician or a functional medicine physician, because these people are going to help me look at the whole system and how one physical system interacts with another energetic system or hormone system, et cetera, and help me come up with a solution that's based in cause and effect rather than just numbing out different effects.
Right.
And then on the last day, there were panel discussions about community mental health centers and mental health needs for veterans, the global movement for physical health intersection between psychology and orthomolecular and integrative medicine. Orthomolecular means simply targeting the nutrient therapy for the specific person rather than saying, okay, here's a list of symptoms and here's the medication you need. Or here's the list of symptoms. A lot of people who have copper overload have these symptoms, so we're going to reduce your copper. Rather than doing that, the orthomolecular approach says we're going to take a look at what's going on within your body. We're going to do the blood work and the hair analysis and whatever we need to find out not just what you're putting into your body, but how well your body's absorbing it and using it. And then we're going to design supplements or exercise or dietary change to meet your specific need, you, Magda, not women Magda's age or people who live in the state Magda lives in. So that's the orthomolecular approach. They call it targeted nutrient therapy because it looks at each individual, and then they actually take that assessment to a pharmacy and have the pharmacy specifically formulate a supplement just for you. And then there's a talk on alcoholism recovery and diet and nutrition for autism. And there's the impact of living with chronic illness such as cardiovascular disease. So all of those various talks are part of the summit. And a good number of them, as I said, the intention was to provide illuminating information to the broader audience, to regular, the consumer. So hopefully that answers your questions. I know that you dropped, but good thing is you don't even have to pay for it. You can listen to the archive of the show and...
Can you hear me now?
And I can hear you now.
Yeah, we did get dropped. So I heard what you were just saying, and I think you have given me so much more information about how to make that that choice. And it all sounds very, very useful. Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. So do I simply go to the same website to get on board and order?
Yeah, try that. And if you have any trouble, let me know, and I'll hook you up with the correct information. Yeah.
Okay. Can you remind me, if you're remembering at this moment, what website? Because I know I wrote it down somewhere.
It's all one word, integrativementalhealthsummit.org.
Great. Okay. Thank you very, very much. All right. Thank you. And I shall mute myself and quietly listen.
All right. Blessings. So 20 minutes left. Plenty of time for comments or questions or answers or topic suggestions. It was fascinating to be a part of the panel with Dr. David Grand and Dr. George Lindenfeld and Brad Yates talking about trauma. And the panel was moderated by a woman who started off by saying, yep, I had a lot of sexual trauma as a child, and so I'm, you know, it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And this entire summit was put on by people who are some of the most well-intentioned people you'll ever encounter. And the goal of Journey's Dream and Mensa Medical is to try to help people resolve mental health difficulties without just swatting at symptoms, without just taking medications to numb themselves out, without chasing the effects, to get at a cause level, make a change in your life that produces more loving, more creative, more joyful, more productive life experience for you. And that atmosphere was evident throughout the weekend, and it was far and away better than the rather disappointing summit I was involved in a year before, where it had nothing to do with Journey's Dream or Mensa Medical, but it was during the time of COVID, and so it was all virtual, as they say. It was all through the computer, and it was just about as dry and disconnected as you could ever imagine. And so this was delightfully better. Lots of good information and lots of really well-intentioned people and lots of hope for the future. Hope for the future of us as a culture and for people who have mental health struggles. The other thing is that the core work that's offered through Journey's Dream is called the Optimal Being Program, and that's built around Michael Rice's seven-step worksheet process and his targeted journaling tool that he calls the Mind Shifter. So area code 760, you're in the air. Who do we have? We're going to try it again. 760, there we go.
Ann, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hi. Hey, Magda. Anyway, it was good to hear her voice and her questions. So would you talk about sleep added to some of the things that you've just talked about, especially like, okay, so I can have, you know, the best eating program, but if I don't get enough sleep. So I don't know if anybody talked about like percentages, or is it go back to what you were saying about it's going to be an individual?
What do you mean percentages of what?
Of like how much sleep plays into the nutrients, into the mental health of ourselves.
Well, it's huge. It's absolutely huge.
Okay.
If you don't have good enough sleep for over time, you can actually get psychotic. And on yesterday afternoon about 2:30, they had a panel discussion about sleep for mental health. And there were three experts that talked specifically about the issue of a variety of issues, sleep hygiene, diet and nutrition, exercise, you know, all kinds of hormonal imbalances, factors that relate to sleep.
Okay. Because I still been working on getting a healthier sleep pattern, and so it occurs to me I can have, you know, be eating the right things and be thinking the right things, but if I'm not getting enough sleep for my body to repair itself and do the things it needs to do while I'm resting in the deeper sleep, because from my functional doctor, whatever it is, the testings that go through the computer kind of thing, programs, it was still coming up at not getting enough REM.
Well, and it's not just how much sleep, it's actually the quality of sleep.
Okay. All right. Right.
Because there are
so
people
that's
who
what we're showing up.
They right, it we've known this for decades. If we have somebody who's depressed, they sleep all the time. Right? If we have somebody who's depressed and they use sleep as their drug of choice, or their body will activate the sleep, they'll fall asleep. Mm-hmm. They'll stay asleep for 8 or 10 or 12 hours, but they go directly into that deep sleep. And when they wake up, they're groggy.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't go through the regular sleep cycle, which is light sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, deep sleep, 3 or 4 times a night, you don't get good rest. And there's something about the physiology of what happens that actually, when you go through those sleep cycles, it changes the flow of cerebral spinal fluid in the brain, and it takes your cerebral spinal fluid to different parts of your brain and basically cleans up the metabolic waste that gets generated when you're awake all day and using your brain and thinking and reacting. And so if you don't sleep well, your brain doesn't clean itself out, among other things. if you are deprived of REM sleep long enough over time, you can become psychotic.
Okay.
This is why they have sleep deprivation is a part of every single brainwashing torture program ever devised.
Oh, right. Okay. That makes sense.
It's not just in the movies. It's in real life. They move people into sleep deprivation, not just because it's torturous, but because it can actually make people psychotic. And when they control your brain, they can control you.
It's fascinating then about those who are able to survive the Holocaust and things like that. I think I'm off the hand, but okay. But it also makes sense with myself of why some days go better than others. Because my thinking is clearer, so clearly then that has been helpful. And I'm still working on the eating sooner, so that I can get to bed sooner. So I'm okay. I still have some wake up.
I did a podcast with a sleep expert. And so you can go to journeystream.org/podcast and type in sleep or look for, I forget which of the experts I had on. It might have been Dr. Nishi Bhopal or, but it's that important that we decided to make it a part of the On Your Mind podcast. And so as a preview or, you know, a partial look at what you might get if you had that panel discussion that I just mentioned, you can go to the Journey Stream On Your Mind podcast and find the one on sleep deprivation or healthier sleep.
Okay. I'm writing it down, but I'll just re-listen to it as well. I can get all that. That's really helpful, though, because I knew it was important and, you know, up and down with it, but sometimes, and I know Dr. Rice and you both said this, sometimes it takes one more time of hearing something before it clicks for each of us. So that was just a great visual as well. So I appreciate it. Well, and I appreciate you reporting back with us on the integrative. That's awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. It was May 4th of this year that they published the talk with Dr. Nishi Bhopal, N-I-S-H-I. And her last name is B-H-O-P-A-L.
Okay, it was May 4th, you said?
May 4th of 2021 is when that was published on the On Your Mind podcast.
Right, On Your Mind. So that On Your Mind podcast, is that all one word?
Go to journeysdream.org.
Okay.
journeysdream.org/podcast, and it will take you right there.
Oh, okay. Slash podcast. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Awesome. Thank you. Blessings for continued doing what you're doing.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Blessings. We have 10 minutes left, so if you have somebody you think we should interview or a topic or a book or a fun anecdote or I'll mention again what I was talking about earlier with the book Awareness by Anthony DeMello. Anthony's trying to help us understand that probably the most important question anybody will ever ask you is, who are you? And the same thing comes out when you listen to Michael Singer. He talks about that question, who are you, is the most important question any true spiritual teacher will ask you. And when you're slowing down to consider this, you recognize that you are not your thoughts. Most of us have been trained to observe or to think or to create the belief that we are our thoughts. But he says, look, you can pay attention to this. It's not that difficult to do. Your thoughts change sometimes moment to moment. But who you are, the essence of you, doesn't change every time your thoughts change. Think about it. There's a part of you that thinks you were the one who was in your body when you were 5 years old or 10 years old. Or maybe you don't have any memories beyond 18 years old. But there's a part of you that feels as though you're the same one that was there when you were 18. And yet, it's so clearly observable that you're not the same as you were when you were 18. Nothing about your body is the same as it was when you were 18. So what is that essence of you that hasn't changed? That's your true nature. That's why at the top of every reality management worksheet, Michael Rice starts out with that and says, look, here's our primary premise. My true nature, my very essence, the essence of my being is this energy of love, creation. The energy of life expressing in form. What is that? And how different is that from my thoughts about it? And what do I need to do moment to moment in my life to be able to get in touch with that? And if I'm smart, I'll want to be consciously aware of that before I decide on an action. Before I take any action, it's really beneficial for me to get connected to and consciously aware of what is my true nature. Because it's that conscious connection with that true nature that will lead me to do only those things that are in alignment with that true nature. I like to quote Dale Ellen Hoffman, who talks about how the word in ancient Aramaic that was translated as this and this and this and eventually ended up in the King James Version of the Bible as faith has to do with getting a conscious connection to the rooted center of my being and then taking an action. It means acting from the rooted center of my being. That's what faith means. Faith is not blindly believing in something that someone's told me that I can't prove. Faith means being consciously connected to my true nature before I think or speak or act. And if I'm willing to do that, my life gets better, starts to get better, and just keeps getting better by leaps and bounds. So I'm looking at yet another spiritual teacher who says the same thing, Anthony DeMello. Who are you? That's the most important question you'll ever ask or try to get an answer to. What is your essence? It's awareness. How can you have awareness? You're part of the one mind. You're part of all awareness. Is the awareness that you have that you're using to look at your hands or look out the window or drive your car, is that awareness any different from the awareness that was there 4,000 years ago in people walking the planet? Well, the obvious answer is no, it's not any different. People are people are people. What we're talking about so many times on this show, we've talked about, people ask me, what's the difference between me and somebody else? And I say, the difference is, the only difference between you and anybody who's ever lived is the degree to which you're able to live from the realization that we are all the same. So how tall you are, what gender you are, how much is in your bank account is completely irrelevant. The only thing that makes any difference whatsoever in these differences we might assess between ourselves and others is the degree to which we're able to live in the realization that we are all connected and we're all the same. That's getting in touch with your true nature. That's seeing the truth of who you are. You are a spark of the divine light. You are the energy of creation expressing in form. You are, you know, create whatever language you want that is, that resonates well for you, that understands that you're connected to the life force that flows through everyone and everything. On Thursday in the support group, we listened to the interview I did with Pierre Pratervand, and he told the story of the time where he belonged to this Christian sect, and they had this definition for God, and they said, this is the one true definition for God, and you had to say it just the way they created it. And he went to talk to an imam that he knew. And he was so full of himself, he said, I was so cocksure, and I was going to show up this imam by, you know, educating him about the true definition of God. And he went and he asked the imam, and the imam said, well, he said to the imam, so what definition do you Muslims use for God? And the imam said, well, Pierre, if you took all the water in all the lakes and rivers and streams and oceans on the planet and used it as ink, and you took all the branches on all the trees everywhere in the world and used them as pens, and you wrote and wrote and wrote, you would never be able to write all the names and all the attributes of the Creator. And in that moment, Pierre was just given the lesson of his life to that point in his life, and that he was like a little frog at the bottom of a well, and someone was trying to educate him about the existence of the ocean. And he simply couldn't comprehend it. But he did wake up to realize that he was just like a little frog at the bottom of a well, rather than the great teacher that he imagined himself to be. So that's our show for the first hour. Hopefully before too very long, there it is. As soon as I say hopefully, there's Jeannie Rice's phone number. So I will remind us, hello, I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you had an awesome weekend. I'm sure you did.
Quite full. Quite full.
Good.
Were you able to play a best of on Friday?
Yes, I did.
All right.
And I actually sent you a text letting you know which one I was going to play. It was one that you had on your Mind Shifters Academy, and it was back from 2015. So it was a summary of the work. So it's out there now. We can use it again and again.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great show.
You are welcome. All righty. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, October the 11th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And so while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just thank everybody for being here and being part of this. I invite you to go to the website, which is whyagain.org. You can click on the bullseye or start here in the upper left corner. They both take you to the same place. There's lots of information that will get you started or help you along the way if you're already familiar with the work. There's audios and videos. There's book downloads. There's just lots and lots of information. There's posters. So just go out and look around and click on things and download things and put it to work in your life, and you will see changes. I talked to somebody the other day, and she's now in a crisis mode, and she wasn't doing the work before, and now she's in crisis, and it's like, I need to know how to do this. And it's like, you know, you didn't get there overnight. You're probably not going to clear it out overnight. And, you know, things have gone so far, it doesn't say that it can't be reversed and be turned around. However, you can be at peace in the midst of the situation. I gave the example, and I use this a lot, of the disciples being in a boat. They were out at sea, and there was this huge storm and the waves and the wind and all this, and they were afraid. And they saw Yeshua, Jesus, walking on water. And Peter said, I know if you ask me to step out that I can walk on water too. And Jesus is like, well, come on. Peter steps out of the boat, and he actually walks on water. Now, nothing has changed in his circumstance. The storm still rages. The waves still rock. The wind still blows. Nothing has changed in the circumstance. But when he has his focus on the master and he's walking on top of the water, it's irrelevant that there's a storm. But then when he starts looking at the circumstances, he sinks, and he has to cry out for help. So are you sinking, or are you walking on water? You know, we all have storms in our life. They're different for you, different for me, different from Michael. Everybody has storms, and they're all different. And we have to ask ourselves, are we sinking, or are we walking on top of it? So the circumstance, what I told her was, your situation may not change. You know, the symptoms and the diagnosis and all those things might stay the same, and they might not. They may totally clear up. But you can be at peace and walk above it, regardless of the storm. And so that's what I offer this morning. And so put the tools to work in your life. Don't wait till you get in a crisis to try to dig yourself out. And I'll welcome Michael to the show. Hello, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here once again as we get to deepen the understanding of these first century Aramaic ideas of forgiveness. I'm sitting out on the deck on this gorgeous sunny day, a few white striated clouds in the sky, mostly blue. Our weekend was made up of creating a hoop house from cattle fencing. Pretty awesome and easy setup. I'm gaining much more appreciation for farmers with every project that we do. It was quite a day yesterday, but we took our tomato trees, which are over 10 feet tall, and we laid them all down. We had them tied up on a string suspension system, them all down, because we couldn't put that inside the hoop house. So we laid them all out and then put these 8-foot by 50-inch cattle panels in, made for cattle fencing, but they're just perfect and easy, you know, easy with some work, but bent them, had them meet in the middle, so we've got about a 6-foot plus walking space inside. Now all our tomatoes are hanging free, enjoying the sunshine, and we're still, gee, we had a big mess of fried green tomatoes last night. We had knocked a few off the vine, but I'm looking at probably, I don't know, maybe 60 or 80 absolutely gorgeous tomatoes still growing. And hopefully, once we put the plastic on, when it starts to get cold here, they'll continue to grow. And we'll been feeding the worms and all kinds of neat stuff. So learning lots. And, you know, it's an aspect of life that if people pay no attention to, it doesn't really matter too much what else they do. Because if you don't have nutritional solvency, if you don't have contact, if you're not grounded in the earth, then there are going to be problems that are unresolvable. You know, there'll be people who will say, well, you know, I improved my nutrition and boy, I healed all kinds of things by improving my nutrition. Nobody has ever improved or, pardon me, healed anything by improving nutrition. However, their bodies have been vitalized enough by the good nutrition to be able to heal what needs to be healed. It's the structure that reorganizes itself. When I say body, of course, I'm talking about the energy system. If, let's say, for instance, you know, back in the 30s, they were saying that the soil in America, they were telling Congress, is nutritionally, or pardon me, minerally deficient. Now, it really can't be minerally deficient because that's what it's made up of, but the minerals need to be released and there needs to be life in the soil. One of the things we're learning more about, and we're working on getting life back into this clay that we're sitting on and making actual soil out of it rather than it being dirt. And what we're learning is that if there's life in the soil, like if you haven't sprayed a ton of glyphosate on your farm, then you've got life in the soil, and the life is what loosens the nutrients, loosens the minerals. But if your structure, if you've been eating food that has, through chemicals, had the minerals bound to the soil and not available, then, you know, it's kind of like having a piece of copper wire. Someone goes in and takes all the copper out. You've got a great power supply coming in your house. You've got a wonderful light bulb here. But if there's no copper left in the wires, it's not going to light up until you put copper back in the wires, until there's a conductor there, and that's what minerals do in any energy system. The energy can't move and reorganize itself, and so it tends to disintegrate. When you pay attention to your nutrition, you know, we do an intensive, we do a total fresh and raw dietary regimen, and you get minerals and you get the vitamins and nutrients and subnutrients that you need, then the system can rebuild itself because it has the raw materials required to rebuild. So, you know, an important part of forgiveness work is being nutritionally solvent, because you can say, I want to heal this issue. I want to get rid of this issue. I want to get rid of this issue. Well, no, actually what I want is my fifth of scotch and my coffee tonight. And, you know, I'm going to have six of those donuts in the morning at the office because they bring them in and they're free. And they're all white flour, which is pure poison, and they're sugar and they're hydrogenated fat. You know, not much healing's going to happen there. You've got to have a system that is viable with the conductors, with the nutrients that it needs. So we invite you to look at that aspect of your life. And if it's not in harmony, then you might start to look on a deeper level. Something that we haven't done, Jeannie, and we might want to take a look at, I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, when we do an intensive, and we don't have any intensive scheduled at this moment, we're looking at doing a couple of different things, but we do have a 90-hour video program that is actually a combination of two intensives. So there's all the processing, all the question and answers, all the teaching on why is this happening to me again, the forgiveness process, healing through relationships, the commitment, which we're going to talk about from the book today, communication, did you hear what I think I said, codependence to interdependence, hands-on, or pardon me, mind shifters and still point breathing. So we've got a 90-hour video package available, and with that package there is a Facebook page, private Facebook page, that you'll get login information to, that you'll be able to go in and pick up all of the information that you need to, on whatever level you're ready to. I mean, the program is set up so that there's 14 weeks, three meals a day of fresh and raw food, and there's instructions on what kind of equipment you need. If you've got a kitchen that serves dead animals, what do you do? Where do you start? Well, thank you, Yurate, young lady up in the Cincinnati area who is a raw food chef who created this awesome project that we were engaged in for the intensive. And so she's got videos and audios, instructions on what equipment you need, how to set your kitchen up, what you need to order, when you need to order it in order to do this set of meals, that, and all the recipes are there. And we haven't talked about making that available, Jeannie, as a standalone product, and we might want to do that apart from the intensive for anybody that really wants to jump into and do fresh and raw food. That might be a good idea. And it comes with the 90-hour video package, and that literally 90-hour video package is a combination of two full intensives. One was 14 weeks, and one actually stretched out to, I think it was 17 weeks. And so each session comes up to a total. It's actually 89 hours right now. We've got one more hour to add to the package to round it out at 90. But it's just, I mean, some of the work that was done, the information that passed between people, the processing that was done, the question answer sessions, it's just it's just such a treasure trove of information about this work. If you're ready to take your work to the next level and you haven't done an intensive yet, or even if you haven't done the codependence intensive, we're introducing some new tools in that particular intensive as well. So that whole package is $600, so you can let Jeannie know, drop Jeannie a note at jeannie@whyagain.org. Give you your phone number. I'll be back in touch with you and get you set up to participate. If you need to spread the payment, if you're interested in doing it, you need to spread the payment over a period of time, we're happy to support you in that regard. And, you know, we don't play in the arena of interest or anything like that. So that's available. And if you're interested in the food program, maybe do the same. Drop Jeannie a note, or if you've got my phone number, you're welcome to call me. And we'll figure out just what that particular product would be apart from the intensive. So I hadn't really been thinking those terms before, but we'll have to put some thought into that. And the importance of what you do with food is really, really major piece of the puzzle. The same as the thoughts you put in your mind. Like nutrients, you digest them. If you focus and fool around in the world of hostility and fear, then your structure integrates that. And that means that structures in your so-called body, organs, cells, vessels, they are traumatized by trauma thoughts. And when they are traumatized, they stop functioning properly. The body literally metabolizes your thoughts. And if you don't want hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief being part of your structure, then the work that's required is to remove those things from your structure. And that is a major project. That's really the core of this work. If you go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. Well, if you go to the Aramaic language, that's not what it says. Not even close. In Aramaic, what those words say is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Literally, your mind energy creates this state of organization or disorganization of your physiology. If you come from a culture, either the larger culture or a family culture of rage and guilt and grief and hate and fear and condemnation and gossip and slander, if you come from that, then you're in different states of disorganization, of dis-ease. The main tool that we want to transfer and make available, quite literally, to every mind, heart, and being on the planet is the tool of forgiveness. And we want to define forgiveness as it was originally defined when it was originally taught. We live in a culture that has totally and completely reversed the meaning of the word forgive. You and I have been taught all our lives that forgiveness is, you did something terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Now, you'll notice if you've been taught and you've engaged in that kind of so-called forgiveness, that you could be the poster child for my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Because if you believe that's forgiveness, that's the world you live in. It happens again and again and again and again and again. Because you're a creator, and what you hold in your structure, one, if it's painful, it's because it doesn't belong there. And two, if it doesn't belong there, then life is designed to send you somebody that will force you to look at circumstances that will bring that up for you. When those things come up, you're going to do one of two things. And you're going to function according to your own individual personal code. If your personal code says, well, when somebody conflicts with me, what I do is the same thing as my power person did. This is the codependence work. I rage at them, and I scare them away. I intimidate them so they don't bother me again. Well, you know, rage is a pretty tough disease, really hard on the immune system, really hard on the heart, hard on the whole energy system. And so, if that's the personal code that you have at this point, then we invite you to be aware of what rage actually is. Rage is not a way to protect yourself. Rage is an anesthetic. It's no different than alcohol. When people rage, they rage because something painful has come up in them. And when that something painful comes up in them, their addiction is to creating an internal anesthetic that anesthetizes against their pain. Now, I can only share with you that over the years, this has been verified time after time after time in working with people directly. I mean, I don't care whether it's in the prison system, whether it's former military, there's a lot of rage there, is when somebody goes into a rage, if in that very moment you can get them to drop their rage, they will process through their PST, pardon me, their PST, and there really doesn't, there isn't a D
PTSD.
On the end of that. It doesn't belong. PTSD. Well, I want to eliminate the D, though, because the D really, it isn't a disorder. It's a way the structure adapts to pain and trauma. It's a way the structure helps to avoid what it can't handle. But if in the moment of that anesthetic, you can open the hidden parts of your mind, and this is what forgiveness does, in order to remove the root of the pain, and that's what forgiveness is, then the next time somebody does that behavior that you used to think was the cause of your rage, you'll look at them and you'll go, oh, what are you doing? There will be no disturbance in you because there is no disturbance in you. The reason you are disturbed at any time in your life that you're disturbed is singular. There's disturbance in you. You're not disturbed because Harry did this or Mary did that or whoever did whatever. You're not disturbed because of that. You're disturbed because there is disturbance within you. And when you recognize that and you stop pretending you can forgive somebody else for the fact that you're disturbed, and you engage in the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, here's what will happen. You will collapse the perceptual constructs of your mind that justify you believing that it's all about somebody else, and you'll get to recognize the reason there's a why is this happening to you again in your life is because it's inside of you. And when you recognize that it's inside of you, and you have the tools with which to address and remove it, then you'll no longer need the anesthetic. Now, I've seen the same thing happen with people using alcohol. You know, alcohol is an anesthetic. What's the famous song that goes with alcohol? Feeling no pain. If I have pain, I can take this anesthetic, literally, if you take the water out of alcohol, you've got ether. I can take this ether in and anesthetize my pain. If you give people the tools, now, you know, alcohol addiction is a tough one for a lot of people. I mean, years and years and years they work at it. But if you give somebody the tools with which to address their pain, when their pain is gone, there's no desire left for alcohol because people then experience, as opposed to relief from pain from alcohol, if there's no pain, people feel the toxic effects of alcohol. I remember working with a woman in South Florida back, this is probably 35 years ago or so. And she started doing this work. Her husband was a big-time businessman, workaholic, alcoholic. And every night he'd come home from work late, 9, 10 o'clock. She'd have dinner ready. She was a housewife. She didn't work outside the home, took care of the kids. But she'd have dinner ready, and they'd have 2 or 3 drinks before dinner. They'd have a bottle of wine with dinner. This was a 7-day a week routine, she shared with me. And then they'd have a couple of drinks after dinner, but they weren't alcoholics. She started doing this work and decided to quit drinking. Just, I'm going to stop. And it was about 5 years later that she came back in a session and shared with me that she'd been to a party and someone had offered her a drink. And she hadn't had a drink in about 5 years, and it was hard liquor. And she was like, yeah, I'll have one. And she said when she put the glass to her lips, the alcohol no more got past her tongue, like just starting to swallow, in her mouth and starting to swallow, she said, and it felt like razor blades in my kidneys. Now, you look at what happens when you pickle kidneys, and that's exactly what alcohol does. Kidneys, liver, everything else. Liver's often the thing that breaks down first because of the pickling process. And people literally, alcoholics, bleed to death from the inside. It's a horrendous way to go. But the cells being pickled, the cell walls are literally broken down. You know how you take a hard cucumber and you put it in pickling juice, and then you come back and it's crispy, but it's softened because it's breaking down of the cell wall. That's what happens with alcohol. So when you start to get rid of the anesthetic and you deal with the pain, when the root of the pain is forgiven, removed, then the impact of the alcohol, the next time if you touch it, if you use that stuff, the next time it will show up as some sort of traumatic assault somewhere in your energy system, wherever you as an individual are sensitive. So we invite people to give up all drugs, including sugar and caffeine, and don't do it all at once. You can't do it all at once. You swing back too hard the other way. But as you gently do your work and you care for yourself and you reach into deeper and deeper spaces of caring, then you end up in a whole different posture. And that's what we're here to support you doing, is living in a different place than the place of the culture that has gone before you. Unless the culture that has gone before you is perfectly fine and wonderful and acceptable to you, then, of course, no need to do the work, no need to bother. Haven't met too many people who live in that arena. But anyway, so we're going to go back to the chapter on clarifying love and why is this happening to me again. We were coming up on the commitment, and I said on Friday that I'd like to spend a little more time talking about the commitment. So I spoke earlier about life is set up. If you hold any kind of trauma energy within you, that energy literally, it's like it's in the design of the universe. That energy pattern draws to it that which will match its frequency. And so if you hold trauma, life abhorring you being diseased and dying will send you someone that will show you what it is you're holding onto inside of you. And when it comes forward, it will come forward either as direct information, like, oh, my God, look at this inside of me, or it will be projected into your brain's image of someone else, and you'll say, look what someone else is doing to me. But you'll notice that even when you're fooling yourself by saying someone else is doing this to me, notice that shy of a punch in the nose, the hurt you're experiencing is inside of you. You know, somebody says something nasty and you go into a hurt snit, where's the hurt? It didn't come from their words. It was triggered by their words, yes. And life is here to show you everything you are holding on to with which you are killing yourself. And virtually everyone on the planet is killing themselves with these energetic patterns. How do I know that to be true? Because unless I'm way off base with you as an individual, everybody in your bloodline, just like mine, over the age of 120 is already dead. Death is inherent in an energy system that is filled with disintegrative energy. And the whole planet's bought into it. The whole planet's doing it. I posit the thought, is that a requirement? Is it possible that death, all death, is suicide? I would offer all death is suicide. And when I recognize that, then I can begin to remove the energetic patterns that will ultimately cause my death. Now, you go back into the ancient Aramaic, and you remember the word sin is an archery term. It actually comes from the archery range. If you're out there on the range and you're firing an arrow at a target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper will yell sin. All the word means is off the mark. So if we sin, if we engage in an energy, you know, if this physiology was designed to incarnate love, and we engage in an energy of hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief, then those energies are off the mark. They are sin. In the ancient scriptures, when they said the wages of sin is death, they were talking about physiology. They weren't talking about theology and how God's going to get you for your sins. That's just a pile of hooey. The simple fact is, if you engage in an energy that is of a disintegrative nature to a cell, that energy is going to implant itself in the cell, and the cell is going to begin to die. Well, Michael, how could you prove that? Well, just take a look at what the cell biologists are telling us. Exactly what they explained in the Aramaic 2,000 years ago, they're showing in the cell biologist's laboratory. They're showing that when you think a thought, that thought produces a molecule called a neuropeptide. That neuropeptide circulates around in your structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. The neuropeptide lands on the cell, and inside the cell where the neuropeptide energetically inserts itself, a new energy shows up inside the cell. If a cell biologist is looking at it, they call it chemistry. It changes the chemistry of the cell. My offering is there's no such thing as chemistry. And people say, Michael, come on now. You're so far out in left field. What do you mean there's no such thing as chemistry? I studied chemistry in school and university. That's crazy. Well, let's listen to Einstein for a minute. On such things as matter, and that would include chemistry, we've been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. There is no chemistry. I remember I was in Indianapolis, Indiana, back about 25, 28 years ago. And after I presented that idea in a workshop I did, I had a chemistry professor from one of the local universities come up to me. He said, Michael, you know, I listened to your lecture tonight, and I realize, I teach on a university level chemistry. And the truth is, we don't have a clue what we're talking about. We're not talking about chemistry because there's no such thing. We're talking about energy. We're not talking about bodies because there's no such thing. We're talking about energy systems. Violate the integrity of an energy system, it starts to fall apart. We call its falling apart death. The wages of sin is death means bring an energy in that doesn't belong and you're going to die. How much hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and war and suffering and pain and trauma, put down, self-degradation, you know, how much of that has been passed on to you through your family system, through this culture? I mean, just take a look at it. It's horrific what's being done in this culture today. You look at the approval rating of those who rage and shred other human beings mentally, emotionally, their reputations will make up anything and just shred them. You look at how popular that's become. It's even become something teachers have recognized in schools and named after certain politicians who have made rage the fashionable, rage and destruction of others the fashionable thing to do. And kids are following suit. So if you want to recover from that, the skill you're going to have to develop is the ability to reach back into that cell where that disintegrative energy is, whether it is the disintegrative energy from your own thoughts, your own mouth, or from your generational patterns, because these energetic patterns that go into the cell are stored literally in every cell in the structure, including the sperm and the egg. And were you to give birth to a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure literally every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever engaged in, encoded in its quote-unquote chemistry. Every reality your mind has ever produced is going to be in that child, in your offspring. Remember, the sins of the father will be passed. The energetic patterns of those from the past are going to be passed on. And then it further says, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. There's codependence work. There's the power person dynamic. And our codependence intensive, when I spoke about a little while ago, we introduced the concept of a power person. And a power person is a person who at some point in your life had more power over your life than you did, was not at that given moment functioning as love, and you perceived it as survival. When that occurs, the human energy field opens wide and is like a sponge that just sucks up everything in the environment. If what's in the environment is rage and disapproval of the child that's subject to that power person, then that child just sucks in the energy of rage and the disapproval. If the disapproval coming from the power person is of the child, then the child takes on, and you listen to their language all their lives and how they speak about the disapproval of themselves, how stupid they are, how unworthy they are, how they'll never be valued enough, how they were born broken. There's a whole theology that tells everybody that you're all just sinners. Excuse me, you were created in the image and likeness of love. Maybe that sinner stuff is a false identity. Maybe we're not designed to live there. Maybe we're designed to forgive that and return to the truth of who we are. Literally, hold a newborn child, and you get to experience that that child is made of the stuff called love. It's what we are. It's not something we do. If your personal code is not based in love, then life is going to give you every opportunity that you need in order to clean up the personal energetic patterns that run your mouth and run your life and run your behavior. You know, the alcoholic, the next morning when he or she wakes up and realizes the atrocities they've committed, says, oh, my God, that's so terrible. I would never do that to you. Well, yeah, I did it last night, but I was under the influence, so that's okay, but I'll never do it again. And they mean it. I mean, they absolutely mean they'll never do it again. But you get to the point with alcohol where the inhibitors in the mind are removed. If that person hasn't gone in and removed, and that's the number one thing that alcohol does, is it knocks inhibitors out of the mind, the things that are inhibited that we would normally never say and normally do under the influence of alcohol. Those things are loose, and that's why people do the crazy behaviors that they can do. So life is going to show you everything that you hold on to. So Richard asks, what do I do? How do I do this? What's the best tool for really, truly getting to the space of love within relationships with children, spouses, or myself for that matter? And in healing those generational patterns, when someone triggers a healing opportunity, the first thing to do is to choose to be responsible for your mind's output. Forgive and learn to hold the condition of love in your mind in all circumstances, regardless of what your mind prompts you to do. So you got to stop. You got to be out of your mind. You got to ignore your mind, or you'll just continue the patterns from the generations. So make a commitment to do something different and stop doing what you feel like doing. because feelings are simply reflection of unconscious thoughts. When we find ourselves feeling like, well, I've committed to love, but what I really want to do right now to this person is rage at them or scream at them or hit them or run away from them or poison them or whatever. So regardless of what your mind prompts you to do, make a commitment. And then develop the brain cells and the capacity to live up to that commitment. Will it be hard? Yeah. Are you going to do it the first time? No. No. So we call this kind of love that we're talking about all-encompassing love. The tool, my commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop, was developed to assist in creating that space of love. It's a powerful key in staying on track and keeping love in your mind when you feel turmoil. It is the best reminder I've found to get me back to a loving space when upset surfaces. Speak it, at least daily, in your closest relationships, and say it aloud to yourself while looking in the mirror. My commitment. So there are several forms of the commitment on the website. You can go to whyagain.org. I'm going to share the commitment that you would use in the context of a relationship with someone else, but there's a copy of a commitment on the website, again, whyagain.org, and that is a commitment to speak to yourself in the mirror, first person. This is the second person commitment. We're inviting you to consider using this as a tool to rebuild your personal code. So that, like, for instance, I promise the first line of the commitment, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth. Now, people feel like they've been caught or whatever, and they feel like they need to lie to get out of it. So this is one of the steps toward supporting somebody in functioning true human being with choice as love, to tell the truth. Now, most people, I mean, we live in a world of liars. Sadly, that's just what is. And very early we learned, for most people, that telling the truth wasn't acceptable. You know, the example I like to use of that, you know, imagine little Johnny goes out in the backyard one day and Mom's standing there talking to Mrs. Jones over the fence. Mr. Jones comes out and gives his wife a peck on the cheek and says, I'm going to work. And Johnny looks at and sees exactly what Mr. Jones's energy is toward his wife, and it's pure hatred. And he speaks up and says, you know, this child of two says, hey, Mr. Jones, why do you hate your wife so much? Mom turns around and whacks him in the head. He gets a good beating and told, don't you ever say things like that. That's the beginning of training to lie and pretend that your lies are true. Now, if you look at the whole culture, that's kind of what's running the show. So I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, people say, well, Michael, why would you treat that person lovingly, gently, and with respect after what they just said and did to you? Well, what they said and did to me brought pain up in me. I need the presence of love. Where am I going to get it other than from myself? Well, this person who did this might be conscious enough to hold the space, but do you suppose they'd have been saying and doing what you think they said and did if they were that conscious? So if I recognize who I am and come through my form as love, then I get the serving of love that my body's mind needs in order to heal. Lovingly, gently, and with respect. I will do this in my thoughts, words, and actions, whether in your presence or not. Now, there are three levels of energy upon which we operate: thought, word, and action. If you're into physically abusive action, well, that can be a relatively easy thing to do. It's put your hands to your side and stop. But, oh, controlling the tongue. Go back to the scripture and talks about who can control the tongue. It is one of the most vile objects in the world when the mind is filled with hostility and fear. What was that that our moms and dads use, our moms especially used to say, to make your words gentle because someday you may need to eat them. So can you be loving, gentle, and respectful in your words, even with the person who's just offended you? Well, why would I do that? Because if you're offended, it's because there's a reality inside of you called offended. It isn't because of what they did. Offended is the output. It's a construct of the mind. If you don't like being offended, then you've got to forgive or get rid of that construct in your mind. And go back and, you know, just think about your power person. Watch how your power person responded when someone, quote, unquote, offended them. And then determine what you're going to do with that. Are you going to get stuck and lost in offense? Or are you going to be a person who can't be offended because there's no offense left in you? So actions, then words. And then the more subtle level of energy where it is most missing in our culture to change our thoughts, to literally become responsible for the thoughts we think, which literally become the behaviors that we do. And then I'm going to do this whether I'm in your presence or not. And somebody says, well, you know, I'm on the other side of town talking to an old friend. I can, you know, do a little degrading of this person. They won't know it. Well, there's nothing we know of in the universe materially, what we call materially, that can stop the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Literally. All so-called matter is transparent to mind energy. Mind energy penetrates everything and impacts every mind that has similar thoughts on the planet. The rager contributes to the mass of rage that runs so many minds. You know, we talk about we want to get herd immunity from this virus. Well, if you're going to talk about herd immunity, then you've got to go to the other side of the coin and recognize there's a thing called herd disease. Herd disease has been introduced into our culture on a whole new level the last few years through politics. And the herd disease happening in mind is hate and rage and degradation and destruction of anything and anybody who doesn't follow you. That's a herd disease. And I'll offer that. I suspect this pandemic was at least in part brought on by the fact that this herd disease has taken over America and the world so deeply. This raging, vile, vicious mind that's running so much of the world. You look at the political movements happening around the world to capture others, to degrade others, to turn others into slaves, to the authoritarian game. It's been produced on a massive scale. What if you became one that, if you are in any way supporting that, if you do that kind of language, that kind of behavior, what if you became one who started to move in a different direction and created a critical mass on the planet of being loving, gentle, and respectful in your thoughts, your words, and your actions, whether in someone else's presence or not? It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of discipline to do this. And discipline, by the way, does not mean, in Aramaic, it does not mean properly beat up. The child has to be disciplined, you know, the stick. The word discipline means disciple. It comes from the root disciple. It means to be properly taught. Here's the teaching. The next paragraph of the commitment, in every interaction, I will look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you as I surrender to love, our true nature. So in Aramaic, humility does not mean grovel in the earth like a worm. The Greeks have taught us, you know, be humble, go grovel, grovel, grovel. Make sure that you get nothing and somebody else gets everything. Whose con do you suppose that is? In Aramaic, the word humility describes a mental quality where one has the ability, no matter what this person in front of you is doing, to see and to energetically cooperate with the highest and best in that person. You know, I look at these people that are out there modeling this rage and this degradation of everybody and everything, and you just tune in and you get to see the kind of pain they're in. I have great compassion for those people that are in so much pain that they can't control their own mouths and end up destroying themselves and the lives around them. There's so much pain there that's in need of healing. My connection to my source and nurturing my relationship with you are always more important than any issue. So, you know, we have issues. Everybody has issues. And few people realize that their issues are simply productions of their minds. They're perceptual constructs. So we see two people, and in pretty much every case, there are two issues involved. Person number one has a perceptual construct that they project into their brain's image of person two. And so it's like they have no way to see the actuality of person two out of that state. They have this projection, and this projection is like a wall that they place between them and the person they're projecting on. Then person two has a different projection, a different perceptual construct that is like the wall that they have. So now there are two walls standing between these two people who just last week did these wonderful vows about how I'm going to love you and cherish you forever. What happened? Well, when they joined, vitality increased. They joined in that commitment to I'll cherish you forever. Their vitality increased. When their vitality increased, all of a sudden they couldn't hold down the crap they'd been hiding from each other. So now it's in their faces. Am I willing to do something with that? So when I remember that my source is love, and it's my connection to my source that is key to me staying connected to love, and I realize that's more important than my issue, then I can start to take down that wall, at least my side of it. If I've got a partner who's willing to at least start to take down their side of the wall, then, you know, we have between us then the ability to reach through those projections and actually embrace each other, actually step into that space of love. And so, yeah, you know, we all walk into every relationship with a whole bag of issues. That's the nature of the humanity at this point. When we own and change that game, then everything shifts and changes. And then if you make this first part of the commitment, this last paragraph becomes really important because all hell is going to break loose. You know, people sometimes have, you know, they got their little hostilities and their fears, and they have their signals with which they, you know, telegraph, don't you say another damn word, well, you just, you know, all of that. But if you actually start to do this, then things are going to start to open, things that have been hidden. So the third paragraph is what I'm going to do when those things start to open. If anything unlike love comes up, I will hold this in my heart and listen as I learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for my own realities. Wow. Somebody who's in rage actually speaking like, I have rage coming up rather than you enrage me. What's that? So what's that going to do for somebody? Your words dictate to your mind how it's going to construct its perception. If you say, you enrage me, then now I have this perceptual construct, this wall that I put between us of you being the cause of my rage. When I get honest with myself and I realize I've been through this rage 87 different times with 42 different people, then I start to speak to myself honestly. Oh, my reality. I have rage coming up. So I'm going to hold this in my heart, hold this in love, and listen as I learn to experience and be responsible for my own realities, my rage, my sadness, my grief, my hate, my vengeance. Wow. What a difference that's going to make in somebody's life. And then the last line of the commitment, I'm here. And this commitment, again, we're proposing that you consider it as a personal code and learn to integrate it. I'm here for and with you. I will keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. So that's a personal code. You can go to our website and get a copy of it. I'm sure Jeannie has already put a copy of it in the notes for today. So you can go to the notes. If you go to whyagain.org, you scroll down the page, you'll see a microphone. When you hit the microphone, you'll see links that will take you right to the archives of the show. And with those archives, Jeannie has a set of notes. And so she probably has already, knowing her, put that, the link in the notes so you can find it easily. And or just a request of you, we're asking for support here. If you go back through the archives and you listen to a show that doesn't have notes, there are some shows that were, we went through them without notes, especially in the early days of the radio show. So if you do, we would really appreciate it if you do a brief description of what you heard in that particular radio show so that, you know, somebody can go in and do a search, keywords, and do a search and find what different topics are addressed in different shows. You know, it's not something we started from the very beginning, didn't realize that was a possibility, and so there are some shows out there, and it'd be nice to have your support if you see any of that. And beyond that, that's our commitment, and that's the completion of our chapter on clarifying love. I hope that has served everyone, realizing that the truth of each of us is not that we can do love, but that we are the substance of love. It's not a verb, it's a noun. It's a state of being. When you function out of it, everything changes. In the socialization of each individual, we build, due to the pressures of the culture and ignorance, we build a self based in something other than love. If you go back and listen to Yeshua, he said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. In essence, what he's saying there is, in order for you, love, to live, to really function through this form, that false self that's been built into your body's mind, the one that demands, it has a personal code that says, if you do this, I rage, if you do that, I steal, if you do this, and all of this is an adaptation to stress. And when you get down to, you know, we do a workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. When you get down to what causes stress? Stress is caused by setting goals. You get down to what forgiveness looks like. Forgiveness happens by canceling goals. Setting goals, creating stress, causes a mind to generate a construct out of its content that gives you the best information it's got on how to solve this problem, how to achieve this goal. If the data that's being used by the mind to generate that perception is corrupt, then your behavior will be corrupt. When corrupt data is used, how do you tell when corrupt data is being used by the mind? There's some form of hostility or fear active. Whenever hostility or fear are active in the mind, there is corrupt data being used to build perception. The mind in that state is a liar. The way you collapse the liar, and this is the core of forgiveness in the first century, is you cancel the goal that's driving the perceptual mind to produce that particular construct. When that construct collapses, you get to go to the root of that construct. You get to bring it forward in the presence of love, and that's where forgiveness happens. So it's quite a different idea than the one the Greeks gave us. We're here to make that as understandable as possible. And I'm not sure why I went on so much, but we're down to 7 minutes. So we've got time for at least one question. Anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue, Jeannie, or anything in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. No hands up. Someone press one. We have time for a question.
Yeah, we got 5 or 6 minutes for a question or a thought. If you're out there in listener land, or, you know, did that make sense to you? Is there anything that didn't fit for you in what I just had to say? If I were in your hometown and delivered that from your local library or prison or church or community center, whatever it was, I walked down off the stage after just saying what I've said, would you be walking over to me and saying, Michael, what about, or, well, how does this work? Push one. Let's talk about it. That's the purpose of this show. And I'm listening.
We had an awesome breath session on Saturday. Maybe mention what's going on there.
Oh, that's a good idea. Sure. Yeah, we did our second online Zoom Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop. Actually, we did it during our intensives first and found that it worked so well that we could do it online. So we did our second one last Saturday, and we'll actually complete it on Wednesday night. If you're interested in participating in that, we've chosen to do a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop each month on the second Saturday of the month. It'll be from 10 until whatever time it completes. We had a smaller group this Saturday, so it didn't stretch out as long as it did the month before. But anyway, from 10 until 5 o'clock or 10 until completion point, we'll be working with the Still Point Breathing process and processing the Mind Shifters. Part of the package, if you decide you want to join that process, and you can join it on any one of three levels. You can do just one session, you know, wherever, drop in and do one. You can do a package of three, or you can do a package of 12. And so we'll do Saturday, and then the Wednesday following that Saturday from 7 till 9 o'clock Eastern time, and these are all Eastern time zone times I'm quoting, on Saturday from 7 until 9 p.m., we'll do a follow-up session where we'll do questions and answers and process what people experience in their Still Point process. So if you're interested in that, you could once again drop Janie an email, J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org, and let her know you're interested in the Still Point Breathing membership.
And we have a hand up.
And you have a hand up. Let's go for it. We got a couple minutes.
904, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Jeannie and Michael Dusty.
Hey there, young man. Welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
You're loud and clear, sir.
Oh, good. I never know with this phone.
We got about 3 minutes.
I know. We don't have much time for this, but I wonder if you would elucidate on the perspective of goals. You talked about goals and some stress and whatnot, but goals. Let's say you've got a goal or something that you have high resistance to, but you know that it's a necessary goal.
Right.
And I just wonder, since you were talking about goals and stress and whatnot, I wonder if you have any takes on that.
Yeah, there's actually a whole workshop we do called Getting the Stress You Need. And in that workshop, what we point out, you know, you'll notice that in terms of behavior, and we're talking about behavior with the commitment today, you'll notice that if you're a normal person, a normal human being, loving, caring human being, you kind of live that commitment naturally with everybody. If you're a generally miserable person, of course, you don't do that. But the average person, until somebody violates a goal you have for them, you want them to do something and they won't do it. Notice that it's easy to live a commitment with people while they're doing everything that you want them to do and fulfilling all the goals you have for them. Notice that it's easy to be approving of yourself when you're fulfilling all the goals you have for yourself. But notice how many times people will get into, when they violate a goal, they'll use the language that their power person used to describe them to describe themselves. They'll just, oh, yeah, I'm so stupid. Oh, I never should have been born. I mean, I can't tell you how many horrific things I've heard people say about themselves. And so there's some Harvard research, and I'm going to just run the clock out till the show quits because it's a big question, and we can pick it up tomorrow. But there's Harvard research that shows that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, they can measure 10,000 units of electrical activity, the max amount of data that goes into perception is 9 bits. So our behavior is driven by perception. When I tell my mind to, I need to accomplish this, my mind will bring forward the best information. Out of the 10,000 brain cells that are firing, it'll bring forward the best 9 bits that I have about doing that. If it's something I know nothing about, it might be mass confusion that comes forward, and my behavior is, I'm out of here. I'm going to quit. I'm not going to do this. It's because of the stress created by the goal. Now, you can alleviate stress by one of two things. You can either achieve the goal or you can cancel the goal. If you don't cancel the goal will remain active in the mind till death.
Oh, yeah.
And let's start out with that tomorrow. We're down to about 10 seconds. The show's going to cut us off. But let's start out with that idea tomorrow. And, Jeannie, I don't have a pen here, but if you could just make a note, we'll start out with that idea of moving forward in that arena. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
We'll continue tomorrow. Have a blessed one. Okay. Lots of love. Bye-bye.